Okay, good evening. So the shaila that was posted was as follows. And let me just give a brief hakdama. I generally try to stay as far away as I can from these type of questions because unless consulted by the two people together and you're just helping them work out an agreement, you're bound to have one person who's going to be upset about this. And I generally recommend we dealing with something of a low value. You're not going to go to Basedin for a pair of pants. And you're not going to go to court for a pair of pants. But you do want to know what the right thing to do is. Right. The right thing to do in a case like this is, where the two parties involved, go to a mutually agreed upon rabbi and agree that you'll follow what he's going to do. And then just take that psak instead of making a big deal about it. And if that's only if it has to come to that, if you're able to solve this by yourself before getting to a rabbi, that's even better.
Does it matter if the dry cleaner was Jewish or not Jewish in this particular case?
Probably, because you're not going to be able to take your non-Jewish dry cleaners to the rabbi. He's not going to agree to that arbitration. So they don't want to go to a small claims court about it. So in many cases, it ends up just falling apart because you're not going to go, the whole suit cost whatever the person says it was an expensive suit. Well, let's say it was a child suit. It was $300. By the time you're done with all your fees of going to court, it's just not worth it.
Right.
So generally speaking, we're going to have to just make a couple of assumptions here just to get through to start with the case. The assumption is going to be that there's no condition on behalf of the cleaners which limits their liability. Sometimes the cleaners will tell you as you're dropping something off. And if they don't tell you, sometimes it's written in something that you'll sign that says that they're only responsible for damages under condition A, B, C, and D. And even if they are responsible, there's a limited amount of responsibility that they take. So that we're going to assume right now that all that is not relevant. We're assuming right now that when a person drops something off at a dry cleaner's or at a tailor and it gets lost under that professional's jurisdiction, that professional, if the professional is a tailor or if the professional is a dry cleaners, regardless of what it is, we're going to assume that they're obligated to pay back the value of the item that they lost. In this case, we have a very interesting case because the value of the item that was lost holds significant value in the hands of the one who dropped it off, but not much value for anybody else. Mm-hmm. If you were to take this pair of pants and bring it to a store, to a clothing store, and put it up for sale, you're not going to get that many takers who are going to be willing to spend money on a worn, used pair of pants, given a worn, used pair of pants from a child who already managed to tear a hole in the pair of pants. So selling this pair of pants is not going to earn you a lot of money. But if you were to go to the owner of the pair of pants and say, how much money would you take for the pair of pants, they would have a value for that pair of pants. They'd say, you know what? I'm not going to sell you the pair of pants for less than A, B, C, and D because then it ruins my suit. So it's a very interesting scenario where the owner of this item holds the pair of pants with significant value but no one else in the world values it for that amount of money. So here you have someone who drops a pair of pants off at the cleaners because they got a little hole and they want to get it patched up. And their real goal here is to make sure that the pair of pants does not get ruined more because it's still wearable. Yeah. Children have to wear pants sometimes. That's not perfect. That's just the reality. Children wear clothing. They wear it well. And bli ayin hara, they should wear it well. And we should be happy when our kids wear clothing well. But they wear the pants. And sometimes it's in less than perfect condition when they're wearing it. But it still has a certain value. And he drops it off at the cleaners because he wants to prevent it from getting ruined more. Now, this cleaner, this tailor, loses the pair of pants. So now we find ourselves with a problem. Because replacing it is not possible. You can't just order a pair of pants. It has to be an exact match. A suit is not a suit if it doesn't match. So you need to get an exact match to this jacket. And sometimes, and in many cases, it's hard to find the exact black or the exact blue or the exact gray. Even if it's charcoal, it's a little darker charcoal. So it had this type of pinstripe, that type of weave, There's just so many different variables that come up in a pair of pants that sometimes it's just impossible. Even if you find the same weave, this one has pleats, that one doesn't have pleats. This is a wider cut. This is a slim cut. So just to find the exact replica of the pair of pants could be impossible. And then ordering a whole new suit can be extremely expensive. So you're really stuck in two ways, because the person can't be compensated properly for his pair of pants, because to him, it was his suit. Without the pair of pants, now his kid can't wear the suit. But to go ahead and tell the tailor that he has to now go out and purchase him a brand new suit for, let's say, even $150, that's also pretty extreme to say he has to do this. So let's try to understand what would be the variables. I'm going to work through this from a tshuva written by Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss is a dayan. He lives in Eretz Yisrael, and he has a beis din. He is a very chashuv paisik, and he has a number of svarim that he wrote called Minchas Asher. Actually, recently, he donated two copies of his Minchas Asher, which he wrote al HaTorah, in the weekly Torah reading. So he actually sent one to the shul recently because the shul helped out with publication with it somehow. And ultimately, the bottom line is he has a responsa. He has svarim that he has written with responsa that he wrote with regard to various different areas of halacha, spanning the four different chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. So in Siman Kuf Yud Aleph, he really deals with a lot of different variables of this question, which is how I would like to go forward with presenting the answer to this question. He starts off by quoting a Nesivos. Nesivos, just for some background, Nesivos wrote a Pirush on the Shulchan Aruch and throughout Choshen Mishpat. It's a very well-used sefer in the yeshivos because he's very lumdish. He goes through every halacha, and he has posed a lot of significant chidushim with regard to halacha lemaisa in Choshen Mishpat. Now, there's a halacha here in Siman Kuf Mem Ches where Shulchan Aruch is talking about somebody who had a path. He owned a path that went through a number of different fields. Yeah. He left for some time. And when he came back, he saw that there was a transfer of ownership of the surrounding fields. And when the new owners came, they completely took over his path. Now, he's not sure exactly which one of the people he can go to and say, get off my path, because it wasn't marked clear enough. He just knew. He walked through.
Right.
So now he has a problem. He's not sure which person took it. And the Shulchan Aruch says, each one could push him away and say, you know, go to him. Go to him, go to him. Now the Nesivos is very bothered by this. He's just trying to understand what is going on here. Somebody is on a piece of property that doesn't belong to him. And how does this work? And he spends a lot of time asking the question, but ultimately what he says is, it's talking about a case where he doesn't actually own it. He didn't own the physical property.
Right.
Because the problem is, if I own physical property, it's impossible for you to steal that.
Right.
Because even though you could go on it, you could put your things there, you can do whatever you want there, but ultimately the property is mine, so I can just tell you, get out.
Right?
Right? Because so that's the concept, the idea of karka in an exelus, you can't steal land.
It more of an easement or a right of way that he used.
Right, exactly. But ultimately here, all that happened was, like you're saying, someone just came and moved onto his property. So however that happened, whatever the situation surrounding that case was, you can always go back and say, this is mine. Here's the deed. This is mine. Right? So, what he ultimately says is, so, lekach nira din ze, eino, ela beneved lo derach, dahenu shegufa karka hu shal achar, rak shahaya lo shibud v'chiyav al bal hakarka, litin lo drisas regal. What he is explaining is that this person never actually owned the physical real estate there. This person had rights to walk through the property. And he goes on to explain his ultimate point that he's trying to bring out is that the right was something that was valuable to him, but not valuable to anybody else. And he goes on from there to say that from this halacha we learn that when something has value to you, but no value to anybody else, his words are, trying to find the exact word where he writes. Yeah, Dinira. The davar she'eno shava be'atzmo lemachro velikach damen ba'ado, something which you cannot sell and actually get money for it. Rak she'shava le'isha hu, it's only that it's valuable to that particular person. Ein hamazik chayev l'shalim. Someone who damages it does not have to pay. That's a chiddush that the Nesivos comes up with, and he brings two cases to prove his point. We're not going to go through those two cases, but ultimately he brings two cases. And the idea that the Nesivos, the idea that he proposes here is, which is something which has tremendous ramifications in a number of cases, and we'll describe a few of them soon, is that if I have something which holds tremendous value to me, but zero value to you, then if that item is damaged, I can't charge you for it. And that's how he explains that halacha. That right to walk through the property is only valuable for you, because who else wants to walk through it? No one else has any reason to want to walk through it. To own the karka, to own that property, has value. But simply to walk through it, for other people, it's not valuable at all. And therefore, we can't say that anybody actually damaged him to the point where they're obligated to pay him, because there's no value in the market. There's no market value for this karka. It just happens to be that for you, it's worth it because you need to get the other side, because you own property on the other side. But to nobody else does it have any value. That's the chiddush that he says. Now, what Basher Weiss points out is that there are a number of cases that if you go with the psak of this Nesivos, it would come out a wild halacha in so many cases. And he goes through a number of them. For example, Hamazik lechavero dover she'en lo shavius el labailim kagon darkon, rishayon nehiga, get isha, tu'udat zahut, o komine mismach acher, she'en roi me'etzim tivoy el labailim nisyomim, ve'enenu bar ha'avara l'acher and patrim l'shalim. If I were to go to you and take your passport and rip it into 1,000 pieces, I wouldn't have to pay you. Why? Because to me, the passport's worthless. To no one else is there any value to the passport. To you, it's the only document you can use to go from country to country, so it's worth a tremendous value. And I'll prove it to you. You'll pay the Department of Vital Statistics, whatever it is, not Vital Statistics, whatever office it is you have to go to get your passport, you'll pay them the $100 or $200, whatever it costs to get your passport, because you want to travel. But now once it's made, or your driver's license, the same thing, or any other ID card, it's worthless to anybody else. A person's birth certificate. Now, unless someone's trying to commit fraud with it, it can be valuable for that. But for a person who just wants to use it, it has absolutely no value. Another case, he says, Misha kana adashot yikaro. A person buys expensive lenses for his glasses. Okay? Whether they're for glasses or they're contact lenses, the bottom line is, these lenses are designed for you. So a person takes someone else's glasses and takes a sledgehammer and smashes the glasses into 1,000 pieces. Here, another case. The glasses are they're made for the width between your eyes. They're measured exactly and cut perfectly to work for your eyes, and they're the right prescription for your eyes. What are the chances you'll find someone else who needs exactly the same prescription, with exactly the same stigmatism, and exactly the same measurement between his eyes? The chances are very slim. So, comes out, person breaks someone else's glasses, no paying. And then he goes to another case, Hamazik, Beged Meshumash, Kigon Chalifa, Chutzah, V'kuvah, person damages someone else's used clothing, which is really our case. He would say, "Patim l'shalim, you don't have to pay." Why? Talo ain kol shuk lebegadav mushumashim, writes limkaras begadav mushumashim liyutz behem lam kol kaina. There is a very, very limited, I would say at least, a very, very limited market for used clothing. So a person goes over to someone else's suit and tears it. Right. He wouldn't have to pay. Why? Because it's a very limited market.
It seems like these cases are just taking on, like, if you wanted to sell the item.
Right, not exactly. In other words, exactly. That's the point that he's trying. Yeah. That's really where he's going. And he gives another case. Oh, another what? Hashover chalon bayis chavero okiyotze bo hezek chelik kota midavar gadol patim tashlumi nezek dalo emechir ba chalon bias or putelas or b'chelik bias. So this is a little bit more of a difficult case to understand because we find that people are selling doors and things like that. But think of something in a house which is highly valuable to the owner of the home. You know, you pull a window out, it's going to be freezing.
Right.
But say you take, I'll give you a good example. You have an older home. An older home which has older windows. Those windows are not the best windows. They're not the most weatherproof. They don't necessarily slide up and down so easily. They're not nice. There's no one who's going to buy that window. Now you go over to the owner of the home and say, you know that if you tried to sell this window, nobody would buy it. And he says, yes. So you take a sledgehammer and you smash the window. Say, it had no value. So the person says, but now my house is freezing. Sorry, the item that I broke had no value to it. So what Brasha Weiss is doing is saying that what comes out from this Nesivos is a wild, wild chiddush. It's a wild chiddush to say that when something has value to me but no value to you, that I don't have to pay for it, it comes out there are so many wild cases where a person would not be obligated to pay for someone else's damage. That's right, and it would be, it's just wild. These cases just come out to be wild. So what he really does is he says that he disagrees with the Nesivos, and he brings a number of others who disagree with him as well. And he says, he says, the way that he is understanding how to evaluate damage is just flawed. And as you pointed out, he's saying, how do you evaluate damage? You evaluate how much another person would be willing to pay for it. He says, that's just a mistake. He says, Nir de'erech kol davar ba'atzmo b'shimusha. He says, Ela sheha'arachas hashuma teluya bekama hushava lihimachar b'shok. One second. Ela, shavyo ha'amitis shel davar ba'atzmo b'shimusha. My chalim, every item is valued for exactly how you would use it. My chalim lachila, v'kelim l'shimush, v'kniya v'amechira, eina el mishimush yeish bikush l'dvaram en mkarem, k'te lasut b'mishimush, v'shemachin hira bar, de'ein shabiv l'mechira, el hadarach l'kvoa, eila hadarach l'kvoa, ma shaviv, mechira im achlo etzim ashivoy. In other words, his point is that there is two ways of coming up with a value for something. One is by seeing how much you can sell it for. Another one is seeing how much it's worth to the person who uses it. And he goes back and forth with this. And without getting into all the details, he disagrees with the psak of the Nesivos. He disagrees by saying that we're not going to go ahead and evaluate something just based on whether or not it has a market. There is definitely a value to something. Even if no one else is going to buy it, there's a value to something, which is an inherent value that everyone would agree with that it's a value, even though only one person can appreciate that value. So what he does is, now at the end of as he gets closer to the end of his tshuva, he brings a number of cases. All those cases that we mentioned, whether it's a passport, or it is a driver's license, or it's just important papers, glasses. Chayiv l'shalem es schum ha-kesef shedvarim e'le oylem l'mi shebala knosa. You have to pay the value that somebody would, who does appreciate it, would come pay for. In other words, even though there's no market for it, if you found an individual who is interested in buying this, whatever that person would pay for it. Dekima dekol elo ru'uyim l'shimush v'habayim shilmul kesef k'dei l'hasig osam al karchok shezeh shavyam. Since all these cases are items which are usable and someone paid for them, obviously they have a value to them. His point is, the fact you can't find other people who have a desire or an appreciation for this item, if you found an identical person to the person who was damaged, that person certainly would appreciate it, and therefore it has value. In other words, we don't say when a person buys a pair of pants that the pair of pants only has value for the first 10 minutes that he owns it. After that, the person, because if that was the case, everything would be valued as disposable. Right? There's a different value for a disposable plate and for a plate which you're going to keep for a long time. Even though after you've used it, you can no longer sell it for anywhere near the value that you paid for it. You pull a car out of a lot, it drops significantly in its value. But still, you're not going to say that it has no value. So in all these cases, he says it's a technical problem, but in many cases, people won't buy it. That doesn't say it doesn't have value anymore. It certainly has value. And that's a very important distinction. The fact you can't sell something to someone else doesn't automatically mean it has no value. And he says clearly, V'chein kach nir la nisaiti, gam l'gabi hamazik beged meshumash, a person damages a worn beged, the le'ikra din tzarach l'shalom l'chaveru kama sh'ola beged chadash. Me'ikra din, you would have to pay him how much it costs to buy a new beged. The lo'yala al das, sh'hamazik l'chaveru davar sh'gufo mamon, v'ushavol kuli amo, t'halo af sh'ein shuk l'begadim meshumashim, the literal words, it says, you're going to bury your head in the sand and tell me that used clothing don't have value? He says, everyone in the world wears used clothing. As soon as you wore it once, the next time you put it on, it's used clothing. So you can't tell me that used clothing don't have value. So this person certainly damaged something which had value. Even though you can't find someone who's going to buy it, the fact that people still wear it gives it value. Even if there's no market for used clothing, you'd have to actually pay him the value for a new beged. So in other words, if a person damages someone's used pair of pants, he can't just say, well, sorry, no one would have bought your used pair of pants anyway, so I'm off the hook. So you have to pay him to get himself a new pair of pants.
Does depreciation but that's still, come into any of these cases?
It does.
That's what I was curious.
He says here, he says, the yesh lefasher b'zeh lehoritz chum esuyu mitashlu min zikim v'begadim shemashim. He says, I would say the proper thing to do is to evaluate a certain amount, make some type of compromise and decide how much has gone down. And he says, he doesn't like the idea of depreciating based on years and based on time. In other words, you could really say, how long does a pair of pants last a child? All right, it lasts, let's give an example, it lasts a year. Okay, so if it lasts a year, and I bought the pair of pants for, just for argument's sakes, I bought it for $120, expensive pair of pants. So then that means every month it goes down $10. So if it's 6 months, more than 6 months, then $60. He doesn't really like that so much. But that's the general idea. He says that you would have to find some way to come up with figuring out the depreciation and then obligating him to pay. But that's, in other words, but that only deals with one half of the question. One half of the question is, if I damage a used pair of pants, am I off the hook entirely because no one wants to buy it? Or do I still have to do something to pay it off? Says Rav Asher Weiss, according to the Nesivos, you're off the hook. You know why? Because no one's going to buy it. According to me, says Rav Asher Weiss, I can't swallow this idea that you're off the hook. So you have to pay. Mikra Adin, what's the strict letter of the law? You got to pay him enough money to buy a new pair of pants. Now what happens? If, no, one second, says Rav Asher Weiss, I still don't think it's right necessarily to charge him the value of a new pair of pants since it was worn already, and in our case it has a hole in it already. So I would say to come up with a good, reasonable compromise. To say the pair of pants cost $60 when you bought them, so let's figure out how much it's worth 3 months later with a hole in it. And it's hard to come up with a good value, but you have to use some kind of imagination and know the value is not dependent on what someone else is going to pay for it, but what that person himself values for it. But now there's another question here. This person's claiming that the whole suit is ruined. The whole suit is ruined. So I'm saying you got to buy me a new suit because I need the new pair of pants. So he actually discusses this later on in this tshuva, and he writes, what happens if a person damages? He's talking about a bracelet. And part of the he damages one part of the bracelet. So now the rest of the bracelet is not wearable. So the person could say, you know, I only damaged one piece. So I'm only replacing one piece. But one piece is not going to get you anywhere. Unless you're a jeweler who can put it back together. So you still have the other half of the bracelet, so I'll only give you half the bracelet. Two halves of a bracelet don't necessarily make up a whole bracelet. Even though you could put it onto a gold scale and weigh it, you'll have the same weight. It's still not going to be a bracelet. She says, in such a case, he quotes a Sefer Shaul Umeshiv, who actually says that he only has to pay for half of it. And he explains the fact that the rest. Yeah, he explains the fact that the rest of it is not wearable. That's a grumma. Grumma means I only caused it. When it comes to monetary obligation of paying, you're only obligated to pay something you do directly. You go ahead and damage someone's bracelet, you have to pay for it. I do something which causes the bracelet to become devalued, that's not my responsibility. So the Shaul Meshav says, I damaged half the bracelet, so I pay back half the bracelet. Now the bracelet's not wearable, sorry. That's a grumma. I only caused that, I'm not obligated to pay for that. You should just know that even though a beis din can't actually force him to pay for it, midini shemayim, a person is chayav to pay back for grumma. But in a beis din, we can't obligate him to pay for it. But Basha Weiss disagrees. He says, "V'nir l'nias da'iti barer tavi mazik mamish l'gabei zug ha'agilim dekivan de'ein kol shimush ba'agil b'ayde shnei agilim k'davar echad heim af she'en gavechad." He says, the fact that one half can't be used without the other means that when you damage one, you damage the other. And part of your damage is ruining the other one. So he disagrees. But he goes on to another case, which I think is probably more similar to our case. He says, "Amna misha shal mechaver a sefer mitoch set shal svar." A person borrows one sefer from a set, okay? And he loses it. So now the person wants to get that sefer back, but he goes to the svarim store, and they say, "Sorry, we don't sell it individually. It only comes in a set. You want to replace that one? You got to buy the whole set." That's, I think, really similar to our case. The jacket's in perfect, good wearing condition. But you can't go to the store and just buy the pair of pants. You know why? Because then he'll be left with the jacket by himself. Right? So you can't go to the store and just buy half a suit. So I think that's exactly the same case. Person has a set of sfarim, or a set of books, or any other set, whatever it is, where you can't split the set and buy each piece individually. It says, "Amamisha shal mechavero sefer mitoch set shal sfarim. Ve'ef shal likno sefer bodid bifnei atzmo tzarech li'ian." He says, "I'm not sure. D'mitzad echad, ein zeh doma la'agil, da'agil bodid ein shava klum." One piece, I think it's actually an earring. One earring is not worth anything. "Avo kol sefer v'sefer shava bifnei atzmo l'ma mitocho." Every sefer itself individually. Now, let's take a set of chumashim, right? We have right here a set of malbim. So a guy has vayikra, shemos, vayikra, b'midbar, dvarim. The guy loses the vayikra. So he can't use the vayikra anymore. The other four out of the five svar are perfectly usable. So should he have to now replace the whole set because the svarim store won't sell the other one individually? So he says, in my opinion, says Rabasha Weiss, a person loses the Sefer Vayikra, he has to pay back the Sefer Vayikra. Bereishis, Shemos, B'midbar, and Zvarim are here. You can't obligate me to buy you a new one of that. You can obligate me to buy the Vayikra. I think in that case, it's much more simple. You mean buy the whole set, I'll keep the four, I'll give you one. But whatever it is, in some cases, it's just not reasonable. That would be our case. Guy owns the cleaners, and he damages a kid's pair of pants. He loses the pair of pants. Now the owner of the suit says, buy me a new suit, because the suit's worthless. So now the owner is not going to say, well, I'll buy the suit and keep the jacket, because he doesn't have any kids. What's he going to do with the size 6 jacket? So in such a case, I think it's really similar to that case. So getting back again, it was a used pair of pants and had a hole in it. According to the Nesivos, no payment at all. According to Basha Weiss, yes payment. How much do you have to pay? You have to replace the pair of pants. Does that mean that you have to give him the value of the pair of pants? You should come up with some way of evaluating how much the pair of pants cost. How about the fact that the pair of pants now damaged the jacket? I would say, according to Rabbi Asher Weiss, did not have to pay for the whole suit, just to pay for the pants.